Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Episode 219, we're flying along. Sweet
yeah,
Caroline.
We're hitting the part
not
of
based,
the...
not based on the Neil Diamond song.
Bum, bum, bum.
We can't. Now we're going to get sued.
I doubt it. If Caroline Kennedy didn't sue him over that song, apparently.
I don't think you can do that.
We were just talking about, we spent like the first 10 minutes of the watch, of the rewatch.
Yeah.
What did we call it? Our watch party. Talking about the song Sweet Caroline, which I did not know was in theory based on a photograph.
It's not. That was the rumor. And then according to the internet, it was actually about his ex-wife or wife, Marsha, and he needed a three-syllable name. And so...
Right.
Sweet Mahar.
But there was kind of...
Doesn't quite work.
A reference to it in the tape that was played, which is like...
He calls her
being
Sweet Caroline.
In bed, touching me, touching you.
But
he's talking about like when he kind of indicates the incest, there's a little bit of a
little song nod. Did you? Okay. Hi,
just
everyone.
When you thought Teabag was the grossest character. Hi, thank you for being here.
Yes.
Okay. Before we get started, I have a little bit of a mea culpa. We have a wonderful guest on the show. Her name is Cynthia K. McWilliams. She played Casey on the show, she's the mother of the Franklin family, C-Note's wife and Dee Dee's mom. That's not what I have to apologize for. She's marvelous. Our conversation was fantastic. We recorded a few days ago, which is why we're in different clothes. We did like a Lady Gaga change, like, woo, next thing. What I have to apologize for is when I made... the schedule of guests for this season, I thought Cynthia was in this episode. She is, in fact, in the next episode. So, sorry, you get Cynthia here in an episode she's not in. I imagine we're all capable of coping with that.
We are. And she's a great guest, and it was a great interview. So, tune into it.
Yeah. Yeah,
this
it was
is
really
a candle.
Why did you just show me a candle?
That was the first time, I don't know, because I had it and then I smelled it and then I was like, that's weird. I should probably explain that.
They just picked up. Paul, you guys, Paul's alone in his hotel room in Vancouver and he's getting up to hijinks. Also, the other thing, we are not, in fact, sponsored by Smartwater, P.S.
Not yet.
The other thing that I like about having Cynthia on this week is, and this was not... as much a plan as it was just kind of about where everybody's schedules landed in terms of doing interviews. Having Camille on last week.
Yeah.
And having Cynthia on this week. There's a lot to talk about, sort of, you know, Camille mentioned like being a woman on the show and there wasn't a ton of necessarily writing for us and stuff. And it was a cool counterpoint to have those two, not counterpoint. It was just cool to have the two of them back to back. And it made me watch this episode kind of differently, actually, with that in mind.
You want to do the index?
We should do the index. P.S. This was the first Patricia wedding, right, of the whole season?
Is that right?
Yeah. We haven't seen the president since she was the vice president. Season one.
Because
there was the voiceover stuff that turned out to be wrong. Turned out to be a lie.
The fake voice. Right. It wasn't her, right?
Yeah, the fake out. Anyway, so welcome,
thank
Patricia.
You.
And take us away.
Yeah. Episode 219. entitled Sweet Caroline, was written by regular writer, friend of the podcast. Oh, God. Karen Usher, directed by friend of the show, Dwight Little. Dwight's third episode of The Prison Break, his second of the season. He would do five before the end of the series. And against the regular competition in the 8 p.m. time slot, the episode drew 9.72 million live viewers. That's the highest rating of the previous 3 weeks and the highest for the rest of the season.
Okay, the recap.
Oh, boy.
There are like deals on deals on deals in here. So in the last episode, we left C-Note about to take his own life in order to protect his family as instructed... Excuse me, as instructed by Mahone. So in this episode, the prison guards save him from suicide, and C-Note finds himself eventually being interrogated by Agent Wheeler of the FBI, who it turns out is working with Internal Affairs against Mahone.
Ooh.
Speaking of Mahone, he finds Sarah, fails to make her talk, and then releases her so that Lang can follow her. I guess not releases her, but sort of sets her up in a fake, "Ooh, you got the gun" moment. So that's two interrogations so far. But wait, there's more, because back with the brothers, Michael is interrogated by Agent Kim before President Caroline Reynolds arrives and demands to hear the recording that he has slipped her a note and told her he has. So over the phone, Lincoln plays this recording that everyone is so desperate to get their hands on, and we realize why. It reveals an incestuous relationship between the president and her late brother, Terrence Stedman. I think I speak for all of us when I say ew. Reynolds agrees to pardon the brothers to keep the tape quiet because even Teabag knew not to hook up with his sister. Speaking of Teabag, he arrives in Mexico and gets into a fight at the airport, which causes Sucre to see him on the TV. Sucre thinks about going to get the Westmoreland money, is probably talked out of it by Marion Cruz, but Bellick captures Sucre instead, coming to his house. And so Sucre talks him into the two of them going after the Bagwell money, we think. And then in a final twist, President Reynolds finds herself blackmailed, not just by the brothers, but by the company as well. And she announces her resignation, no longer able to obtain a presidential pardon. Michael and Lincoln are now back on the run, deciding to disappear once and for all.
And may I mention, if it doesn't come up, that my I love this thing. They fight and they get the luggage thing and they fight and then they go through the baggage thing and that doesn't happen. I misremembered that. They fight on the thing, but they don't actually go out
too. And so, no, but it's great. It would be a wonderful thought if they like come out.
Back to the index.
I watched that movie again.
Oh, you weren't. Oh, sorry. Okay. No, not at all. I thought you were just throwing, because we were saying 80s movies. I thought you were just in volatile stock market news that seems quaint. On February 28th, the U.S. Dow dropped over 400 points, whatever, over 3% of the market after China's stock market dropped 9%, which is cool between things in U.S. Chinese markets have been rock solid ever since. And neither economy is in danger of ruining the other one right now. In outmoded institutions news that also seems quaint, on March 7th, the UK House of Commons delivered a historic vote in favor of wholly elected House of Lords, replacing the previous system of inherited or appointed seats, which sort of makes you want to run for Lord, right? Run for Lord.
Kind of does. Fun fact, I had an uncle who was a Lord. Several marriages.
What?
But yeah. The Right Honorable Lord John Moore of Lower Marsh, as a matter of fact. He was appointed.
Sure. Lower Marsh,
Lower Marsh, yeah. Well, the Upper Marsh presumably was taken. Was just always the weirdest thing to me. I was like, sorry, I have an uncle in the House of Lords. Wild. R.I.P. Uncle John.
It is wild.
Speaking of legacies, on March 4th, Stephen King's son, Joe Hill, debuted his novel Heart-Shaped Box, and it reached the New York Times bestseller list. That debut novel would go on to win the Horror Writer Association's award for best first novel. And also, speaking of unelected older gentlemen, on March 2nd, it was the premiere of the comedy flick Wild Hogs, starring Martin Lawrence, John Travolta, and William H. Macy, which grossed $168 million. I'm going to be perfectly honest. The things that were happening this week in history were just not that exciting. So that's our index for the week, because it was a slow
life week. That's good. This can be very good to have a slow life week
in 2007. Yeah, man, I would give a lot for a slow life week right now. We'll be right back to talk about the episode.
We'll be right back.
Riley Herbst from 2311 Racing here. And you know what grinds my gears? Waiting for coffee. But instead of counting frappes and lattes, I fire up Chumba Casino. No apps, no fuss, just fun social casino games to pass the time. By the time my coffee's ready,
order for Riley.
I've already taken a few victory laps. Next time you're stuck waiting, make it entertaining. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. You mentioned during the episode that you, before we get to Cynthia, that you wanted to talk about the scene with Mahone where you clock him being an addict and in some kind of, not in withdrawal, but yeah, an addict. Can you talk about that?
I mean, as I mentioned, I was really nervous to shoot that scene with Billy because he was such a talented actor and so intense in the way that he worked. And I wanted to make sure I wasn't the sort of sea anchor in the scene. I loved the way it was written because so often, without trying to seem ungrateful or anything, but so often women on the show existed to give the men on the show something important to do. And we hadn't really, like, the fact that Sarah on her own had something useful that was character-based with which she could try and manipulate Mahone. Now he fails, he manipulates her right back. But also that it's based in her character and based in this addiction storyline that, you know, we hadn't really connected to a whole bunch that season. You know, she mentions in the train that, like, she isn't using and she's proud of that. And obviously there's the addiction stuff at the beginning of the season, which now feels, by the way, the Lance and Sarah stuff currently feels like it was 5 years ago. Like, it's wild to me that that stuff, we're in episode 19 and this is the same season. But I really liked that scene. It felt like a real scene. And there were times, you know, and Camille talked about this, and I can't remember, I think Cynthia does a little bit too, that, like, the woman part of the scene can feel a little bit like I'm just here to get the guy to the other place. You know, I mean, we talked about this on the rewatch too, the scene between Sucre and Mary Cruz where she's like, please don't go after this money. And there's a lot she could have said in that scene that she didn't, but it's Sucre's scene. Anyway, that's kind of, I don't want to hit it too hard, but I really like that scene between, that sequence of scenes between Mahone and Sarah, because the power dynamic goes back and forth a bunch.
You don't seem nervous, or you, if you did, if you were, you certainly used it well in a scene that you were probably nervous. My question is, he's not 100% playing you the whole time. Like, he is suffering from his addiction in that moment, because he then lets you get the gun. Right? She thinks she's disarmed him, but in fact, he's taking the bullets out of the gun, and it's a ploy to have Agent Harris follow. Okay.
Lang, yeah.
Agent Lang, sorry. Barbie Paris.
Yeah, I think...
He plays it great.
I think it's both. Yeah, he does. He plays it great. I think it's almost like he gets caught and then figures out how to use that to his advantage.
Oh, that's right. So that's where that turn would be for him. He's gonna be like, now I'm going to play that I don't know what I'm doing, and she's going to think she gets the best of me.
Right.
Because killing her doesn't really do him any good. He needs Schofield.
Yeah, but leaving her alive also doesn't do him any good. What's interesting, I think, is that he throws her the pill. Because I think tactic one is, can I get her high? And can I get the information I want out of her that way? Which is a sort of passive. I mean, it's not a passive way of killing her, but like, you know,
it's pretty brutal.
If he knows she's a junkie,
right?
And she, you know, brutal. Like she overdosed once,
right?
Yeah, it's pretty, and you know, I think if I were directing me, mm-hmm. I would probably say, "Hey, give me a take where when you catch that pill, you're a little more flabbergasted that he would take that tack." Do you know what I mean? There's a little more like, dude, fuck you.
Right.
You know, like, because it's a little bit of what he did to Haywire, which is, you know, why don't you jump?
Yeah. But it's not even, I mean, obviously it could kill her, but obviously it's an attempt to get her high to get the information. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Can we what?
Yeah. Can we talk about you on the rooftop? I know we talked about it a little bit last episode, but
yeah.
It's so wild to watch an attempted presidential assassination.
It was way more upsetting. Like, you know, obviously Kellerman does a lot of violent things, and we talked last season about
right.
killing Adina. That was kind of upsetting, and torturing you was kind of upsetting. But, you know, it's cops and robbers. Like, you know, I love acting. I love doing that stuff. That was one of those ones where it actually, you actually felt like being above all those people and looking the scope of a gun at them.
Oh, wow.
It was just like, you know, it felt very violent and scary. And it wasn't even necessarily the political ramification of it. It was more of a mass shooter kind of feeling.
Ooh, yeah.
You know, it was that vulnerability. And whoever didn't tune in last week, we were in Dallas, we were in downtown Dallas, and visible from that rooftop was where Kennedy was killed. Mm-hmm. So that was just also doubly bizarre.
It's bonkers. Mm-hmm. I mean, and also, you know, we could see in the rewatch, we were outside the Magnolia Hotel, that's downtown Dallas. We didn't lock up a 4-block radius. And so my concern would be like, if somebody in one of those apartment buildings looks out their window and sees a guy in a suit with a gun, like
I didn't even think about that.
That could be a wild, like, 911 call. You know what I mean? I mean, especially now.
I didn't even think about that. Well, especially in Texas. Maybe not a 911 call.
Jesus, you're lucky you didn't get shot. Ugh,
I will say that what I remember... I remember it's, you know, they obviously stitch it together in the magic of movie making. But I remember so clearly just watching them shoot that from the arrival. They had no time.
Really?
To actually pull the car in and do the presidential motorcade of that was maybe one take.
Wow. And was it just, I mean, there must have been a bunch of cameras because we got all kinds of angles. And
yeah. There was one up there with me. Yeah, there was so many cameras. And they also did a really good job of making it look like they were taking up much more room than they actually were. Mm-hmm. It was really just in front of the hotel.
Yeah, you can kind of bury a camera in the crowd, and it feels like there's lots and lots of people around.
And then from above, kind of shaky, so you don't... Right. It just feels, you know, like there's a bigger deal going on.
You know, we're back into the episodes this season that are so big, and shooting them in
so big
8 days. I want to say this, I'm almost tempted to say that the stuff I had in the hotel room with Mahone was a 9th day, because these episodes are really giant.
It must have been. It's fun. I like shooting things like the thing in the hotel room, because obviously you shoot that in order, in a row. It's like doing a little play. It's like, what? It's probably four scenes.
One with the brothers and three with Mahone, I think.
Short scene or something
like that. But then, but that was the stuff on stage. Then there was also the stuff that was in the hotel itself, running up and down the stairs and that kind of thing. But
right. But I mean, just taking like, even like you and Mahone, there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's very much like
that day was four scenes of actors talking in a room, which is nice on a show where sometimes you have a day that's just like just run across this plaza and now run up these steps and now get shot and, you know, drive this car.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead. So the scenes with Patty and Wentworth, so Patricia Wittig, who played President Reynolds, I had a moment of going, wow, your job right now is to grieve incest, which is an enormously tall order, and one of the things we bump into as actors where you're like, nope, no idea how this, you know what I mean? Like, can't think about the time that, you know,
right,
my
this?
Friend told me the story about, like,
yeah,
you're kind of just making it all the way up. It is the only time we get Patty in the entire season. This is actually it for her in the show. Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if she was busy or didn't want to come back to the show or would, I don't know what that story is, but this is all of her in the season. And in the rest of the show. And I just was sort of sympathizing with how many emotional gymnastics are required of her in that scene.
Also, and that's such a good point. And we talk about that. We've talked about that a lot with between ourselves and with guest stars and other actors about you show up and on a show like this, you have these like Shakespearean stories to tell with very little ramp up, right? Mm-hmm. Like suddenly it's you know, it's mythic stuff.
For a character she hasn't played since last
season.
She doesn't.
And on top of that, she's also like a head of state. Mm-hmm. Which maybe that actually goes hand in hand. Maybe that actually helps because it's so outsized that it does feel Shakespearean or like Greek tragedy.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought she did a really nice job of balancing those two things. I thought she was really at her best listening to the tape and then kind of grieving his death. Mm-hmm. Stedman's death. And then I loved the thing with Lincoln and Michael. I love the piece of writing where Lincoln says, I wish I could have seen her face. And Michael's
It was really nicely played.
And Lincoln says, yes, I do.
Yeah.
It's like also kind of a study in
Don't
two men.
Me.
It's like, was she humiliated to the depths of her soul? No, I do wish I saw that.
It's a very brother dynamic. Like, no, you don't. Brutal. Yes, I do. No, you don't. Yes, I do.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. No, no, I do. No, it's horrible. Yeah, yeah. I know.
I'm going for horrible, dude. I was on death row.
Yeah, I was on death row for 242 days. I also love the specificity.
Yeah. Yep. Yep, 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 yep. She said something that...
Go ahead. No, please.
Patty said something that I wrote down. She has a line that says, the power that has taken over this country is like a cancer and it will stop at nothing. This is 2007, friends.
And then announces that she has cancer. She has a malignant form
of cancer. Oh, I didn't put that together. I did not do the math. Oh,
yeah,
Paul. Thanks for pointing that out. You're a lot smarter than me there. The audience is sitting there going, oh my God, I can't believe you dumbass. Yes. Yes, I have cancer. That's funny because I heard that and I was like, oh, she just came up with like the first thing. And it reminded me of The West Wing about, you know, should Bartlett have stepped down when he had MS and all this stuff.
Right. MS or Joe Biden. With age, there's that hole to pay. Interesting.
When does the president step down and should it be the president's decision? And if it's not, whose is it? I loved her in that scene, actually. I thought it was really nice work, that moment of carrying the weight of the office and the personal.
Yeah. You said something about how the show is getting, these episodes are big. I thought at first when you mentioned it, that this thing that's happening with the show, and I know that they try to reset for season three. Mm-hmm. But there's this really interesting thing that's happening. One of the things that was so successful about the show in season one, or led to, helped it be successful, was that it was so intimate. And that, you know, if you think about having to screw a thing in the toilet, that there's plot points about the smallest details of prison life and about having to get from A to B or whatever it is. And that it's amazing reveal in season one that this conspiracy, that it's conspiracy, that it's political conspiracy, that it reaches the highest, you know, office in the land, that their father is involved. It gets bigger and bigger plot wise and politically. It, but you, I feel it at this point starting to teeter under its own weight at a certain point. I mean, now you have Michael in a kitchen with the president of the United States having a face off. Like it's, you know, the global political implications of it have suddenly become the turns that used to be, is Bellick going to put him in jail cell with avocado? Yeah. You know, is now, is the president going to give us a pardon or step down?
That's right.
And it's a great blow up that they do. But you, I sense, I don't know if it's my, if it's my audience brain or if it's my writer brain saying, you're going to run out of road soon.
Yep.
Like, how do you sustain? Are they going to go to space? Like, I would always say, next season's in space, under the sea. Like, how can it get bigger? And I think what they try to do in season three, if I recall, is they kind of try to reset.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, what's interesting, as you were talking about, that the image that I had in my mind was almost like a Jenga tower where you take pieces out of the bottom,
yes,
put them on the top,
absolutely,
and all of a sudden you're like, oh, God. I wonder if part of what this does is it resets us. Because now it's not, we've ended the Lincoln versus the vice president, who is now the president, storyline. That is now over. Now it's a question of kind of Michael versus the company. And that's, these are our remaining players. Like, it's almost, it's interesting because it feels like they're starting to
clear the decks and set it up. Yeah,
that's
absolutely
a succinct way of saying it. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, should we bring Cynthia in? Should we take a quick break and then have our conversation with Cynthia?
Well, so before we take a break,
let's introduce her.
Because I'm finding it's hard for people to sit through their own introductions.
Yes, correct. Cynthia K. Williams. She was a baby when she was in this show. She was very young. It was basically her first job on TV. She showed up with a whole daughter, a grown, almost like a 10-year-old daughter on the show.
She was very young to have.
She was very young.
Life.
And after Prison Break, she's had a big, beautiful career. Chicago Code, Nashville, 50 episodes of The Real Husbands of Hollywood, Bosch, Last Days of Ptolemy Gray, Average Joe. She's done beautiful work with amazing actors. And she's a wonderful person and a really fine actor. She's also an acting teacher. She's done a ton of voice work, and she can pretty much do anything. So you can tell.
I wrote that
after,
bio after we had after, done the interview, and I yeah, like, totally fell in love with her.
You fell in love with her all over again.
She's wonderful.
I don't think I ever met her when we were shooting, and it was lovely talking to her. So let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with Cynthia.
And Paul, you know what we should do during the break?
What?
Let's change clothes.
Yeah.
And you can change locations. Well, because you're both Chicago actors, right?
Yeah.
And you were cast. Were you cast as a local when you came on the show?
Were
you living in Chicago at the time?
Yes, I was. So I am a Chicago local. What's funny is that now I'm back in Chicago. I just moved back to Chicago maybe a year ago.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, so I live there now.
Wow.
Yeah, but I was in LA for 15, 20 years in between.
Mm-hmm.
So I never remember exactly in my life. What's funny is I lived in LA for forever, but every time I came to Chicago was when I got work. I'd be in LA like struggling and trying and, you know, just auditioning and hitting that pavement back when we were really in the rooms and doing the things. And I just had the toughest time getting started, but I would go back to Chicago, literally kind of like, you know, it didn't work. And then I booked something in Chicago.
Same exact thing.
I said, Chicago keeps pulling me back, you know? It does. Eventually, once I had worked like enough to where I was like, my career is what my career is. And, you know, from this point, anything right. that happens, it's just work is going to beget work. And then yeah. also I just felt like what was most important is that I was walking into rooms or spaces or calls or whatever, feeling happy and good about my life. And living in Chicago was what I knew would make me happy. So I decided that like, yeah, I'm just going to live where I want to live. And audition 100%. On tape and then it'll take me where it takes me. And it took me to South Africa. So,
wow.
I mean, I grew up in Hawaii. I was actually born in Michael Reese Hospital in Chicago, but I moved my parents moved when I was a baby. So I was raised in Hawaii, and the mainland part of the U.S. was always a little bit like,
Were you an Army brat too?
No, I wasn't. My parents were professors and they just both got jobs at the university.
Got it.
But did you grow up, were you a military kid?
I was. I grew up in, I didn't grow up in, but I was born in Berlin, Germany. So I was born in Berlin back when there was a West and East. I was in West Berlin. My father got out of the military he didn't make a career of it. So he was out pretty soon. I was in the States. We lived in a little bit on the East Coast, a little bit in the South, and then the Midwest. And I was in Kansas City, primarily. Kansas City is where my parents are right now with my brother. And then, so I wasn't far from Chicago, and that's how I hop, skipped, and jumped over there to DePaul. I didn't go because it was close. I just went because, you know, DePaul had a really excellent theater program. And then when I got out, I loved that town, and it was a great working town.
Yep. So so Prison Break was early in your career.
Oh, very
right?
early. You guys, I was a baby on that show. I think I was 21. I will never forget that when I got, I was a baby. I'll never forget when I got cast, maybe 25. I mean, it was somewhere very, very early. It was 21 to 25. Right. If I did the math, I could sit down and think about it, but I was young.
Sure.
I remember that when they cast me to be Lil Dee Dee's mom, right? For whatever reason, because in the first script where they said I was a mom, they didn't have her doing anything or talking. It was just more like, you know, she was there. In my mind, I assumed she was a baby. Like, you know, maybe a toddler, you know? And then when we got to set and I met this little talking, walking girl and she's like, hi, I'm going to be. And I was like, oh my. And I turned around and I was like, well, how old am I supposed to be? When I found out that I was in my 30s, I guess. And I was just like, oh, okay. Well, that's what it is. And I think from that point on, it was an interesting moment where I realized that how casting saw me, you know? And for most of my career, I would go along with that in that in my 20s, I was always playing something sort of, you know, either a mother or, you know, a powerful figure, a doctor, a lawyer, a cop or whatever. It was always these authority figures. And I think that had a lot to do with, you know, height, probably one. And then also just my tone of voice. Yes,
your
that voice.
Voice.
But it was interesting because I was a baby. I was a baby. And y'all were my second project. Honestly, I did a movie right out of college called, Ilmari was the original. The Lake House with Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock.
And Sandra Bullock. Yeah.
He's like dead or there's something about an architect and like he builds the house for her.
And I worked at the architecture firm.
It was like ghost adjacent.
It was a ghost, It was a ghost love story. And they were seeing each other through time, through a mailbox. It was actually based on a foreign film called Ilmari, I think. And then they did this redo of it. But also, you know what else is crazy? I think about this. It's like, what? Eben Moss-Bachrock was Keanu Reeves' brother in the firm, and he was my boyfriend. So isn't that crazy?
Another Chicago actor.
Like, that was insane. Eben Moss-Bachrock, Keanu Reeves, Sandra Bullock, Chris Plummer. That was my first film out of
college.
That
is a wild first film.
And I
that is a
I was,
wild
you know,
first film.
It was a wild first film. And I was not like, you know, by any means supporting, you know what I mean? But I remember I read for like The Shopkeeper and then they brought me back and were like, we think we'd like to see you for something else. And then I ended up reading for Evan's girlfriend and she had a lot of fun things to do in the story, but in the end and the cut and the edit, it was like two scenes. So I didn't really make the cut, but it was still such an incredible experience. You know, I was in scenes with, you know, Keanu and Sandy. And at that time,
At their peak. I mean, those were two of the biggest movie stars in the world.
That movie
and
was
they still
like,
are. But
I mean, there still are. But like, I'd still be excited to be, you know, it was 100%. Insanity. And I was so young. I was out of theater school, so I'd never been on a set before. I never had experienced being on location. We shot in Chicago. It was for Warner Brothers Films. So, you know, it was a huge production. I didn't even know what sides were. I just came to set off book because I was from the theater world, you know? And I was like, I don't even know. And people were like, you have your sides. And I'd be like, I don't know what that means. But I learned everything on that set, like everything. And then my next job was Prison Break.
That gets us to Prison Break questions because, you know, you were so young. And I mean, Sarah and I talk a lot about that show giving us the opportunity to move basically from theater to film and learn that skill set. You seem so comfortable and confident, and you and Rock together, like you immediately, it's, you know, we talk about this all the time on the show.
I mean, first of all, he's twice your age.
Yeah.
Still
Hollywood.
Looks good though. He still looks good, Hollywood. You know?
That people come in on that show and they have to have these, without giving much time at all, these long-term established relationships with people. And that you guys immediately, you totally buy it. You buy the phone calls, you buy the relationship with your brother. It was just really, I mean, the writing is really good, but you really centered it.
Well, thank you.
You guys are impressive. So good. I mean, did you sit down over coffee and talk about the history of whatever, or did you just kind of do your homework on your own? And
I think eventually we did, you know, talk and go over things, but no, when I first came to set, it was definitely just, you know, I was at home studying and getting ready. And then, I mean, I was a guest star. So you know what that life is. It was just, you know, get in here, get in here. We're going to rush you through hair and makeup and we'll see you on set.
Because he wasn't in the scenes with you at the beginning.
At the beginning, no. That was crazy thing, right? Is that most of my beginning stuff was just him on a phone. And I remember Kevin Hooks would be like off to the side, like talking on the phone or some other person.
At least he's a good actor.
At least he's good, right?
You know? Right.
Oh, God. That was another thing. Kevin was probably my... for the rest of my career, will be grateful for having Kevin Hooks as my first executive producer.
Tell me why.
He was amazing to me. Amazing. There's honestly, this far in my life, I would say there have been times even in shows where I am a series regular and where I'm like, there's been times in my career where I have not experienced the level of care and connection that he showed to me as someone so, you know, tangential to the story, really. I mean, you know, I hope that I was in the end, but, you know, I mean, we never know what someone's going to be. He didn't have to give me any energy the way that he did, but he really did. I think he knew I was young. And I think he cared about me feeling safe with Rockmond. And also, I think as a woman of color, he at least acknowledged that. And I appreciated that. That was at a time in my career where it was very much like, you don't talk about it. You don't talk about it. You just go to work and you do the work and don't ask for anything special. And don't, like, you know, very, very much like, hey, no one wants to hear about that. If anything, just pretend like it's not there. Pretend like,
and if just...
No one knows.
And if somebody doesn't do your hair properly, don't say anything.
Don't say nothing.
You know what I mean? Like,
that was... It was very much like, don't acknowledge any of it. Just do the job. And he was very much like, are you okay? How's hair and makeup treating you? Are you happy with your look? Do you feel good about your makeup? You know, just little things.
Nice.
And I mean, that was such a big deal. And at the time I felt it, but in my career later, I really understood it. But even like little things as we went on, I remember just... him taking the time to tell me things about camera that, like, honestly, I was still learning. I was still learning. I did not know. Yeah. And so he would come over to me and he would say, like, hey, just so you know, we're on you right now. This is your coverage. So, you know, if there's anything you want to give, like, this is the time to give it, you know, or just, and I didn't understand. I mean, I was given 100% every take, which I think you should, but I certainly didn't understand like when camera was moving or when it was time. I was learning all of those. I didn't know what turning around meant, y'all. I was just like, I guess we're sitting down now. We're sitting down. Okay, great. So he was very great about showing. He would occasionally even let me look at the monitor, you know, and people don't do that still sometimes. They're like acting very like, you know, like I just really appreciated the way he included me in a show that I was very much a guest on, but made me feel like I was a part of something. You know, all the way up through rap parties and things, he was, you know, he would check in and be like, you're doing okay. And just, he was very inclusive in a way, in a space that he didn't have to be.
God,
and he checked up on me after I finished working. He stayed in touch
really?
With me. Yes. For, probably I would say 3 to 5 years after I finished the show, he would just occasionally check on me, see how my career was going in Hollywood, you know, make sure LA was treating me okay. And, you know, that I was just doing all right. He was just a really great, great EP. And I will, a great show. I just will always appreciate that because he set the bar, you know, for what it should feel like. And when it wasn't that, it was like, hey, that's what life deals you. But I knew that like, it could be better. And at least it allowed me to not get, you know, jaded or whatever, or like kind of, you know, because I knew like, oh, well, that's just how this guy is or this person is. And it's okay.
Yeah. You know, it's so important to be shown how it, not just how it is, but how it should be when it's done best. It's nice to have that early so that 10 years later, you're not like, this is like, cause I remember having that thing of being like, even with representation, meeting somebody pretty far into my career and being like, oh, I didn't realize you existed in this industry.
Right.
I didn't realize someone could care in this way and still be good at their job and not be a total cynical kind of attack dog. And it's all those things that you just described about Kevin, but in the creative sense, it's really great. Yeah. I'm so glad.
I've been really lucky. I think like, it's so funny you say that. Like Dan Barron is my agent at what formerly was known as APA and now is IAG. And he's amazing. I've been with him for, I think 20 years or something. It's insane. I've been with him since the beginning, since I moved to LA basically. So basically everything after Chicago, that was, it was him. And I've had one agent, you know, this whole time. And that's
so
really amazing. And I got lucky, like you said, when I worked with Kevin Hart. Working with Kevin was really great. He was, again, on the rise and at the pinnacle of success. And before he really turned into a huge movie star, but that was really, he was at the height of his stand-up comedy. And I was really fortunate to see someone who came to set on time, who knew what he was doing, who knew every single crew person's name, who never, when there were long days and we had 300 extras, he made sure the extras were fed, or he would call and get a food truck out, or, you know, he went out and engaged with people to keep them entertained. And he kept humor and energy alive on the set. He motivated the other castmates. He kept our guest stars feeling like, you know, even though they had no idea what was going on, they're usually not comedians or actors, but he helped them to be like, hey man, just get in on the fun. He just was a great, and he did it all while he would also take a call from what would soon be his wife. And when he would check on his kids in school, and he never didn't prioritize his family, his friends. He just was such a great example of how to balance it all.
Yeah.
Well, you know, because the longer I spend working on sets, the more I find that it's actually the number one who is the only one who has the power to keep that workplace positive.
Yep.
Personally, I think it should be producers, but they don't, because they're scared of actors. It's true. They are. They're scared of actors. They are. Even really good ones are unlikely to turn to an actor and go, if you ever do that shit again, I will hold you responsible for the 2 hours that everybody... They just don't do it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Maybe you need an old school studio chief. Like, I don't know what it's going to take, but it doesn't happen. The person on a set who can do it is number one. And if you've got a close cast, it can be your series regulars. But the people who go, we don't do that here.
Yeah.
We don't do that here. That was your one.
Yep.
And now I'd like you to go apologize to her, because I understand she's just a makeup assistant, but she's here every day.
Yep.
And that, that took me, I kept looking on sets for like, who's the adult in the room who does that work?
Oh my God, yes. Who is the adult on the set?
It's number one.
Yes.
It's number one. And often you can, not always, but often you can tell by watching a show if it's a good number one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is this world like? But I want to circle back to something you said about Kevin Hooks, because I think it needs to be said about you too. I can only imagine, and this is not me speaking for Hooks, but he had a lot of people to manage. There was a lot going on. And I can imagine, I'm guessing, that part of why he took that time with you is because A, he knew you were really green, and B, he knew you were really good. Mm. Like, I can only imagine that the first time they got your dailies in LA, they were like, oh, we have someone we can really work with. And that was the magic of Chicago in so many ways. Like, we had the deepest bench. People would show up for like a couple of scenes, and then all of a sudden it would be two seasons later, like you, and it's like, well, they're writing whole storylines around things, partly because, and this is not anything you can control, this isn't a compliment, it's just an observation, but dear God, you and Helena looked a lot alike.
Mean, like, we did.
That, like, Paul and I were watching and we're like, did they send out a breakdown for Dimples?
We're Dimples,
like,
yeah.
I was like, this girl is my, like, I was like, if this, it was weird, I was like, this is my future daughter. Like, I'm, how did I
if
not
it was
make
now,
you?
I feel like you guys would both need to check ancestry.com and be like, are we, is there a, because you, it's such a great fit, but there's, you know, it's interesting because so often in the show, this actually fell on the female characters.
Yeah.
What are the real stakes? Why does this matter? Why do we care about C-Note? We care about C-Note because we see he's a good man by the father he is, by the husband he is, by the soldier that he is. But it, there was something dramaturgically that you gave the whole show, which is, you know, C-Note, the first half of the season, we don't know much about him.
Mm-hmm.
All we know is he's the guy who can get anything. And then all of a sudden we see you and we see your daughter. And we're like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
This is what he's fighting
about him.
This is what he's fighting for.
This is what he's fighting for. And it, again, that often fell to the female characters in the show, which was really interesting. And I could go on a whole thing about how they were the lowest paid and the least used and the first killed off and all of that. Although, congratulations, you survived. Very well done.
We made it out.
How did it out? Oh, that actually, random question. Did they try and get you back for season 5 and you were busy doing something else?
Not to my knowledge.
I don't know. When we all came back for season 5, I was like, where?
Where is
like, the... Yes. C-Note was there, but I was like, wait, you guys ran off into the sunset together. Everything was fine. Where the hell are your wife and daughter?
Okay. Yeah, it's possible, but I don't. I definitely... I didn't say no. If that's the, I certainly didn't say no to it. Maybe, and it just never got to me. Who knows? Maybe that was during a weird period of my life where I was
hiding in Bali.
Yeah, who knows? But I definitely would have loved to be a part of it for sure. So no, I don't think they came to us.
Okay.
We were asking about you having instant, you know, having to have instant chemistry with Rockman as a husband and wife, and you guys have been married a while and. Etc. With Helena, who played Dee Dee, your daughter, I assumed as a relatively new to it, coming out of theater school, you hadn't worked with children a whole bunch.
Mm-mm. Nope.
How did you find that, and how did you get along with her, and how did you get along with her parents? Because when you're, people don't know
it
that out there,
also,
but when you're acting with a child,
was,
you're also kind of acting with their parents.
Yeah, it was honestly my first time also being a mom. That was wild.
Right.
It was really crazy. I remember I got home and the first thing I did was call my mom. And I was like, Mom, I'm a mom to like a whole person. Like, what am I going to do? So I was talking to her about things. But in general, with, you know, what I did have the experience of doing was all throughout high school, college and my early career, but really all throughout my career, I had worked with young people. So I've always done some kind of, you know, after school matters or theater training programs or working with at-risk youth. And so it was being around young people was in no way new to me. Caring deeply for people that I had just met was also not new to me. So if anything, this was exciting because at least this young person was someone who was eager to be in this position. My experience with young people had previously been more like people who are a little bit like about the experience and then me having to try to draw them in. But this one was a young girl who was really excited like me. So if anything, I think I was more like, hey, man, this is cool, right? Yeah. I just would be like that's a little kid with her. Like,
yeah, yeah. We're on TV.
Did you stay in touch? Like, did you, I mean, she's got to be.
She's got to be like 30, a grown up now, right?
Almost 30. Almost 30.
I mean,
crazy.
Could have kids.
She could have kids.
Could
I mean, she's
have
actual she's definitely
kids.
Older than you were when you shot it.
Right. That's wild. I would love to see where she is right now. But no, I haven't kept in touch with her. Like you said, I think that's more so about parents and like, if the parent, like there's other shows I've done. I did like a Disney Plus movie. And also like I used to be on a sitcom with on Netflix and my son on there. His parents and I, you know, because it was a long time that we worked together, we stayed in touch and I follow him all the time. And now I'm still friends with not only I still know him, but also the woman who plays his mom on the next show. We talk about how we like share a son now.
That's so cute.
But I think, when you're a little older, a little further in your career, there's a little bit more of that. But I was so young then that I didn't really, you know, develop a relationship with the parents as much other than to just be like, thank you for trusting me to keep your daughter alive while we're on set.
I played a father to the same kid in two different things 15 years apart.
Oh, crazy. Wow.
Oh, that's
wild. 12 years apart. So he was nine, 10, 11 on Private Practice. And then 12 years later, 13 years later, I played his father on
what project?
On Cruel Summer. He was one of the leads. And I remember I hadn't seen him. We had crossed paths once when he was like 14. We were both shooting in Atlanta and we were on the same, like crossing like a stage or something. And I remember I was at a hotel in Vancouver, like right when I arrived, and I got a text from him and it was like, hey, come meet me in the bar. And I was just like, what?
Ooh. Oh no.
Like, come say hi. We're down having a drink. And I was like,
dude, that's wild.
God, it was so weird. And he also looks exactly the same, just stretched out.
That's what I was gonna say. What's crazy about that? So you guys had to favor one another if like when he's a kid, you look like his dad, and then he just wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Dee Dee and I are going to play older. She's going to be my younger sister now.
She'll be your younger sister.
Yeah. I definitely have to call her and find out what she's doing. And whatever I'm doing next, I need her to be my younger sister.
Yeah.
I don't know that she's acting. I remember looking her up.
Yeah, we looked her up. We
for
did.
This. Oh, and I was like, where is she? She's so great, whatever. And there's like no credits, really. And so either she's been like tearing it up on Broadway.
Or a lot of kid actors are just like, that's it.
Yeah,
that's
they get over it.
Yeah,
they have normal. You know, they want to be normal people, which
which I understand.
Not for me personally, but you know.
Yeah, I can't relate to that desire, but I totally hear it.
I just think we didn't have a choice. We were.
Yeah.
It was clear. It was clear we weren't going to be normal.
I know, and it's possible that you know. Little Dee Dee was like, here's the thing. I'm good at math, so I'm going to go work for NASA. Like, this is not.
Right.
I don't need to be a carny.
I'll see you guys
all at Cape Canaveral. Because it is something that you have to love. And I think actually being an army brat in some ways really prepares you for this very peripatetic, like, I'm showing up in a new place. And I'm going to get the lay of the land and I'm going to meet people and I'm going to get to know the crew and I'm going to fall in love with it. And then I'm going to be able to pull my stakes up and leave and go to the next place and not be overwhelmed by all of that.
Yep.
Cynthia, we have some fan questions. Yeah. There's just a couple.
Okay.
Can we?
Yeah.
Let me try to stick these in and like make sure they stay. Yeah. Okay.
We'll take a quick break.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back with fan questions.
Okay, I think we're here. Are we here?
Okay, we're back. Yes,
we're here.
Can you hear us?
No, we're totally here.
No,
I want to start with an easy one. But
I don't think she can hear us.
There, yes, I can hear you now. Aha.
Okay.
Okay.
Aha.
I want to start with an easy one because it's, I think, specifically for those of us who come up in theater, it can be weird. At Ebkatan, wanted
you went
to
away.
Know, what's it like?
Okay, there you are. All right, we're here. Yes. Okay, everybody's back again. All right. Okay. This thing is going to have so much editing on it.
That's okay. We can do
that's
it.
That's okay. So at Ebkatan, wanted to ask, what's it like watching yourself on TV? Did you watch the show? Did you never watch the show? Did your mom tell you she watched the show and had notes? Like, discuss.
What's it like watching myself on TV? It never gets easier. I'll tell you that. But no, I mean, again, I was so young when I did this show. So of course I watched. I watched, one, because it was exciting. Two, because the show was actually really great. Yes, I did watch the show. I was such a fan of the show. I thought it was so cool. And it just, this show predated, like now, like all these, you know, suspenseful, you know, shows with these pieces. It's all, I think, a thing now. There's, I feel like this was very groundbreaking at the time. Now I feel like there are a lot of shows that have this energy behind it, but the following of the clues and the putting the pieces together and seeing a thing really stretch out over a whole season. Up at this time, I felt like dramas were more like we finished it in one episode. We're done. We move on and kind of repeat the same, you know, this was different. I loved it and I loved the suspense of it. It felt very cinematic. I loved watching it and it was exciting to watch myself. I also, I think, watched so much then because I learned, you know, watching myself then was very much, I was learning on the go. So for every episode I saw, I'd be like, okay, I see what worked and what wasn't. And I also remember the moments of what I was doing. And I also learned so much about how editing changed everything. Like that, the editor has an enormous amount of power as to what the story is. And whatever I thought I was doing, he's going to decide. that was great. And I also think I just learned how to be gracious with myself on camera. That was a very, when I was young, I had to really teach myself how to not watch with a critical eye. But how to still critique my performance. It's so important, that balance. It's so funny now as a professor, I teach at DePaul University, and as I'm teaching on camera classes, I talk to the students a lot about how important it is to keep your inner critic, but to remember to keep it about that it's an inner critic, right? That you can't let it consume you, and you can't also make the critique about the exterior. That it's gotta be that you're critiquing your interior life. Yep. You're critiquing, what am I experiencing? What am I watching through my eyes? What am I feeling? Mm-hmm. That critique the interior life. Don't critique your exterior. Yeah. Because one, you have no control over it. And two, whatever we see is not what anyone's thinking. It's just not. Yep. We're incapable of looking at ourselves with the unbiased. We just can't. So just don't do it. But it is important that we keep critiquing that performance. So what we can't do also is, I don't like when people go, well, I can't watch myself, so I just don't. And I'm like, well, but then you're robbing yourself of an opportunity to learn from the best. Like, you have got to be the best person you can learn from. Yeah, we learn from other performers. But watching yourself, no one's going to have the face you have, the mannerisms you have, the energy. Like, you need to learn from yourself. Yes, it's great to learn from your partners, your scene partners, and other performers you admire. But if you can't learn from yourself, I don't know. I think that's dangerous. I think we have to be able to set that aside.
Yeah, seriously.
I would like to take your class.
I would too.
I have never been to DePaul University. I want to take your class.
I want to follow up
on this then. What was, because this was early enough in your career, do you remember the first moment that somebody recognized you?
Ooh.
Oh.
And was it from Prison Break? Or was it from Lake House?
I mean, it was definitely from Prison Break. Guys, I'm going to tell you, this is about to be, okay, this is so much dish that you're going to determine whether or not you want to keep this in the story, okay?
Right.
By the way, you can also be in charge of that. You can text us later.
No, I'm
going to
tell you, but I mean, it's really going to be about, do you think this is for the people? Okay. So
I'm still here.
Oh my. So long ago, I was married, okay? Mm-hmm. The man I was married to before I married him was my boyfriend in college. Mm-hmm. During college, he got into a little bit of trouble with the law. Mm-hmm. So he went to jail.
Oh.
So I stayed with him and I went to go visit him in jail regularly. I was living in Chicago. He was in Wisconsin at the time. Eventually, he got moved to Terre Haute. No, he was at Terre Haute, Indiana. And anyway, he got moved to Ohio, but he was close by. So I would go up every weekend and go see him. Y'all, I was a whole actress, living having a whole life.
We've all visited people we love in prison.
Honey.
That is not.
And I was such taking a dedicated, my little
time. You're such a dedicated actor that you're like, I need a boyfriend who's going to go to prison.
You went straight method.
I didn't know it straight yet. I didn't even know what's coming, but something in my spirit. Yeah, no. So my boyfriend was in jail. So this was before he was even my husband. But he was in jail, and I went to go visit him. So the first person that recognized me from prison break was one of the guards at the jail.
That is amazing.
Were they like,
were
they like, what the fuck is going on? What's happening right now?
Yes. They were like, oh shit. Like they were making jokes. They were like, oh shit. She really acting. This is like, what are they saying? This is a method actor right here. And I was just standing there. I'd be like, okay, well, all right. Has everyone had a good time? Would you like to, can I go through the body scan now? I'd like to go through the body scan now.
So funny. Yeah, yeah.
Could you check my bag? Thank you. All right.
Potentially the best prison break fan encounter
that could
I've heard.
Also be the best first recognition story ever.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, mine God. Was at like a salad bar or something. That is a really,
literally
really cool.
The dude checking me in through the full on, like, you wow. know, the scan
to
machine.
The actual prison.
Literally was like, hey, aren't you on prison break?
Are you Cena's wife?
Yo, me and the guys, we watched that show. That's crazy.
Wow.
Which in and of itself was wild. We were talking, I think it was to Reggie or something a couple weeks ago. And it was like, can you believe they aired that show in prison? It was huge in prison.
Yeah, right.
And there's a part of me that's like, should
you don't think that would trigger some people or something?
I mean, people are going to be like, well, I wish I had the plans to the
right
prison
right maybe it was about showing them that like if you're trying to break out of prison it needs to be this detailed
it needs
so
to be
I
this
don't
good.
Know if any of you are
if you haven't completely covered
if you
yourself,
haven't done all this you're not ready
do you have a genius brother who's coming in here to get you
because otherwise
you're the dumb guy that gets in the fights otherwise you're not like you're going to get killed by the mob guy or by these guys or by the
Yeah, by the way, cuz you're not a main character. Like you're
right.
You're now you're a guest star and that you, doesn't
yeah,
ever
and
it was
well.
It was to let them know, honey, most of you are day players, just to be clear.
Yeah, and they don't and it doesn't off and often it doesn't work out well for them.
Yeah, no.
My Lord. Okay, I feel like we have time for one more question, but that was, God, that was the best answer in the entire world.
That's a winner.
I just want to read this to you because I think you'll relate to it. It's not even a question, but somebody at Jess Pitzer wrote, she goes, this is not a question, but I watched the show completely differently now as a married mom than I watched it 20 years ago. And I keep finding myself moved to tears more than once this time around by the Franklin family.
Aww.
I think Casey has some of the hardest decisions to make in the series. Mm. But that, you know, that's interesting too, in that we're coming back to this show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching. I mean, like you, I was way younger than my character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I was 26 or 27 when I was cast. And I was like, so sorry, I'm an MD who's worked for Doctors Without Borders. Like,
you were a genius.
Okay,
you were, yeah.
But,
you're Doogie Howser.
Straight up Doogie
like
Howser.
Doogie Howser,
But like you, because I think of my voice, I never played under 30.
Yeah.
I mean, they eventually made Dr. Sarah like 28 or something because they're like, oh, that's weird. But I mean, never.
Me neither. I started my career at 30 and I've literally,
I feel like
it took 10 years for me to finally even like match my age. You know what I mean? Like I never, and 100%. In my 40s, I finally am playing the age I am, but I've always been, you know, trying to catch up to.
Yeah.
I think that has to do with both of you, not just about your voices. I think it has to do with a certain kind of gravitas that certain actors have and certain actors don't.
Well, I'll take it. No one ever,
unfortunately,
no
Hollywood,
one ever thought like, hey, let's look at Cynthia and Sarah and find them a pair of legs in a hot tub. I'm really grateful that I got to skip that.
Yes.
Part of things. But anyway, the whole point of this is going back 20 years later and watching it.
Right.
I do see different things in the show. And like the decisions that have to be made around Dee Dee and Casey are some of the hardest decisions to watch in the show. And that's really interesting the way it's aged, I think, along with its audience.
Yeah.
Obviously, there are young people watching it now, but I just wanted to share that comment with you. Because
well, thank you. What was her name?
A very cool one. Jess Pitzer.
Jess Pitzer, thank you so much. And I, again, as someone who was so young at that time, I really I was so unaware of what it meant to be a mom. But I had so many conversations with my mom, and I had to tap into a lot of experiences that I had had with the young people that I knew and had worked with. And I'm really glad to know that as a mother now, that you were able to feel something that in my youth and in my naivete, I was able to find something that you actually connect to as a mother now. That's really affirming, because honestly, as an actress, again, I'm just giving you so many raw moments. I don't know what's going on. As an actress, I think I didn't have children. I never had children. And sometimes I do worry or feel that like there's a depth of my womanhood I haven't achieved. Right. And that does that mean there are roles that I don't possess the, something to be able to connect to, honestly. And I've had to talk myself through that a lot, and remind myself that the craft is the craft, and that we're never completely in anyone's shoes, and we're always finding ways to connect the gaps and bring ourselves to them and them to us. And so I hope that I'm always able to, search for truths that feel real to me so they can feel real to the audience. But that really matters. And I thank you so much. That's really special. To know that I was knocking on the door at something 20 years ago that I hope I'm getting closer to today.
But also, like, before we let you go, I think culturally it happens, but also business-wise it happens. There is a number done on women who decide not to have kids for any reason. And it makes me real mad. I had kids. It's great. It's an enormous amount of work, and I don't think anybody should ever do it if they don't want to. And the idea, I completely understand, because I would probably have the same thing in my head, but the idea that you, that there would be something unavailable to you as an actor because you didn't go through that, just like, I don't know, just as somebody who cares about you, like, you're welcome to, I invite you to take that all the way out of your head and never look at it again, if that's what you want, because of, obviously the answer is no, but also you managed to land a beating heart of motherhood with very little screen time, not a ton of writing, no experience, and so young that, like, that one can, if you want.
I receive
listen,
that.
You're welcome to spend as much time with your neurosis as you want. I sometimes, me and mine sit down and watch Netflix. We have popcorn together. It's great. But you are also invited to let that one out the door, because
I will take your invitation, receive it, and say goodbye to that thought.
Outstanding. Cynthia, we could do this forever. I feel like I need to let you go because it's now past 10 o'clock in South Africa, and it's time for me to go.
It is. Thank God I don't have an early call time tomorrow, guys. That's what I'm excited about. I get to sleep in a little.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores, like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cashback, and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cashback sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cashback. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N, Rakuten.com.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Thank you, everyone, for being with us this week. We will be back next week, Paul and I, to answer a few of your fan questions. So if you're in the U.S., you can call us and leave us a voicemail at 401-3-P-BREAK. Or you can email us at pbpodcast@caliber-studio.com, or you can DM us on the show's Instagram page at Prison Break Podcast.
As always, we invite you to check out our watch party episodes. We watch the show with our real-time commentary, sometimes about the show, sometimes just kind of rambling. They're available in our Patreon community, which we would like you to join. It's on your show page, wherever you're listening right now, or on the link in our Instagram bio. Again, thanks for being with us. And, you know, be good to each other in difficult times. Sarah, nice to see you again.
Yeah, nice to see you too, Paul. You know, I believe Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul is, I think it's a Caliber Studio
production. It is, yeah. And your host has been inmates Sarah Wayne Callies and Paul Edelstein.
Our prison warden is producer Ben Haber.
Cutting up in the yard is editor Lucian Singer, full name.
I would like you to come up with a different L name every time.
That is true. His real name is Lucian.
I know. The front man of our jailhouse room, my friend and yours, Paul Edelstein, who made all our music.
Our prison yard tattoo artist, logo brand designer is John Nunziato. There's little big brands. John Nunziato. And we made that joke. Okay, check them out at www.littlebigbrands.com. Follow the show on YouTube and Instagram at Prison Break Podcast. Join the watch party and our Discord community through the Patreon link in the show notes, wherever you're listening right now.
Because Prison Breaking with Sarah and Paul has been a Caliber Studio production, and we thank you for listening.
Bye from the land of gray.
Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? If you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. Choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No